On Wells Tech Today, Sally and I are joined by semi-regular classroom technology correspondent Jason Schmidt from Omaha, Nebraska. We're talking about video, classroom video to be specific. There's a wealth of it on the internet. How do you find it? How do you store it? How do you use it? All that and more next. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Wells Tech, episode 281 for March 26th, 2013. This is a show where we talk about technology and ministry, and this is our once-a-month show that we talk about classroom technology, and we always have a special guest, and that special guest this morning is Jason Schmidt. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Martin. Hi, Sally.
Good morning.
And, of course, Sally's joining us as well. Welcome to Holy Week.
Yeah, great week of contemplation and celebration. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. How is Jason in Omaha?
Cold, but we'll make it through. It's supposed to, like Sally was saying before, we're supposed to be getting a little bit warmer towards the end of the week here. So cool. Spring will eventually come, whether we're ready for it or not. So. Yeah.
Jason is one of our two regular, semi-regular classroom technology correspondents, and we try and pick a topic that is of interest to our educators at least once a month. And we kind of talk about classroom stuff throughout our shows, but we really zero in on a topic that is of interest to our educators, whether they be in a classroom or, a pastor teaching a confirmation class or whatever. I'm excited about what we're talking about today, and that is classroom video sources. It seems like all the talk about flipped classrooms and getting technology into the classroom, a lot of it revolves around video.
Yeah, definitely. You want to make use of all of the great content that's available, and just kind of having your wrapping your arms around all that content is a big project.
We're definitely in a YouTube generation too, and that I think that has really springboarded what's available in the classroom.
This is one of those shows where you're going to have a lot of links in the show notes, so be sure to tune into the show notes because we have a lot to share.
Yep. Jason, what's your experience with classroom video?
Oh man, honestly, I used Learn 360 a lot when I was in the classroom, and we actually have a subscription to that in my district too. It was kind of an eye opening experience for me. I had a student teacher a couple of years ago, and he was talking about doing things in science class and things like that, and how to teach the kids about this concept. And I said, well, you should probably do a little bit of research and figure it out. And he said, oh, no, I don't need to do that. I'll just go to YouTube. It's like, oh, yeah, I suppose you probably could do that. And, and the kids loved it. And, it's really, really engaging content for them and interesting for them to hear it from somebody else other than, my student teacher or myself. And, that was my big aha moment where, I really should be using this a whole lot more. And, I just intentionally kind of looking for things like YouTube is a huge resource. Learn 360 has lots of really great things. And between those things, it was really kind of cool just to see how that kind of changed the way that I did things.
And it used to be, and this is not too long ago, that YouTube was, the place where you go to find cat videos, but educational, not so much.
Oh, you still go there to find cat videos. They can be plenty educational, Martin.
Okay. I'll have to keep that in mind next time I peruse cat videos on YouTube. But I think from my perspective, in the last, I would say, 2 years or so, YouTube and other sites like it have really sprung up to the need for educational videos. And so you're not just kind of confined to the, those niche players like Learn 360 that have a dedicated purpose. But really, when you're searching for content, you can search across many different resources at this point.
Definitely. And I have the YouTube education site up because it's not just about going to YouTube.com. It's
Right.
YouTube.com/education. Since you guys were speaking about that, they have a whole section of their education site dedicated to primary and secondary education. So you can then drill down to different categories, math, science, languages, history, etc., and find videos specific to that content area. But like you said, there are many out there. Jason's already mentioned Learn 360, and we have a little bit of affection for the Learn 360 site because that's something that's offered as a free add-on when you sign up for the Lutheran School subscription service that is offered each year to our schools. And so if you're part of that subscription service, you have a Learn 360 account. And I'm just logged in right now on our Learn 360 account for St. John's. And this is just basically opening up the world to the world, lots of different education videos. If I search on tigers, for instance, there's tigers
and
Tiger Woods, Tigers of the Snow, and on and on. And you can then drill into a particular video and create assignments for your students to watch. Many of them have supplemental resources as well. So kids can take quizzes and things right here on the Learn 360 site.
Yep. Way back when, this was probably 3 or so years ago, Sally, we actually did an interview with somebody from Learn 360. So if you're interested in learning a little bit more about what their specialty is, go back and take a listen to that interview. But there's other tools like Learn 360. Discovery Education is also available through that subscription service as a paid add-on. And they were probably one of the first out the gate, you know, with pure educational curated videos. So they're hand-picking things by category and doing a nice job with categorization and those kinds of things that makes it easy for a teacher to put together a lesson and find just the right video that they might need.
Yeah, and when you're talking about premium streaming content, the Discovery streaming, that's the Cadillac. That's what everybody, I suppose they're not Cadillacs anymore. Is it a Mercedes? I don't know. Right. the Discovery Education streaming is huge as far as the amount of content that it has available and the quality of the content that it has available. You know, pretty much anything you can find on like the Discovery Channel or History Channel or those kinds of things, you can get a lot of that through Discovery streaming, which is really, really huge.
And they have supplementary material too, don't they? It's not just the raw videos. Don't they have quizzes and those kinds of things?
Yes. Yeah. You can build quizzes and you can turn it almost into your interactive classroom if you want to. You know, you can put worksheets up in there and assignments and tasks.
You can add your own content, including your own videos.
No, not your own videos. Okay. You can't upload
just
your own videos to
content.
It. But right, yeah. And what you can also do with Discovery is, I believe, I'm not going to be 100%. I'm not 100% sure. I don't use it very often. But you can share content across people too. So you know, if you have it set up for your school, let's say, and you want to do something as a school, or you have a couple of schools that are set up with it, you can share content across people. Mm-hmm. Which I think is handy.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Getting beyond the CLS offerings, there are many others out there. We talked recently about TED offering a new TED Ed version where you can go there and see the lessons. You can also add your own lessons to TED Ed. They have it set up so that you can do that, and it's interactive as well. There are offshoots of the videos that you watch. So certainly you can make use of TED Ed, or you can make use of the regular TED Talk site. Just amazing talks that are out there that might tie into something that you're lecturing on in your classroom.
Yeah, and that whole TED Ed concept is really kind of a learning video system, you know, where you can bring together videos from outside, you know, third-party videos, but your own videos, your own supplementing materials and quizzes and those kinds of things, and really make it an incredibly valuable tool for if you want to flip a classroom, those kinds of things, you've got some good, great resources there that can help you do that.
Definitely. Moving on, our friends over at YouTube have great resources. We mentioned those earlier, YouTube EDU. There's also Khan Academy. We've talked about Khan Academy quite a bit on the show. Khan started out with math videos, but now covers all kinds of science topics, computer science, even humanities and specific tech test preparation with videos. He recently added Vi Hart videos. I don't know if you guys know who Vi Hart is, but she does some really creative math, make you think kind of videos. So he's got Vi Hart in his camp as well. Lots of good stuff.
Yeah. Is Khan Academy free, totally free, or is there some kind of subscription attached to that to get more content or whatever?
No, last I checked, it was free. I know they got a couple hundred million dollars from the Bill Gates Foundation for their operation.
That
so
helps. Yeah.
Yeah, that helps.
And Khan is probably one of the reasons why we have this kind of wave of educational videos. Now there's kind of a difference. You get the Discovery Ed and the Learn 360, which are kind of PBS style educational videos about topics, but Khan is instructional. So there's a little bit of a difference as well. So as you're looking at videos, you're going to find a lot of variety in both of those areas. So if you're looking for maybe somebody to teach you something versus, tell a story or, like you'd watch on a documentary, you've got the best of both worlds there.
Right.
Definitely. Well, we have a few more we want to make mention of. We just in brainstorming thought of SchoolTube as well as TeacherTube, which I think both of these have been around for quite a while, kind of an offshoot of when YouTube was just gaining traction, but they're specifically, filtered for education topics. So they existed before YouTube education, had carved out that niche. So, great resources there. Looks like pretty heavily ad supported. So you're going to see a lot of advertisements coming up in the sides, but also very geared toward the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with each of those, with TeacherTube and SchoolTube, you can create a school account. And I think that gets rid of those ads.
Okay.
If you have accounts for your students to get in there.
Okay. Yep. iTunes has iTunes University, and they do have specific carved out areas for K-12. It's not just all higher level learning that's represented there. I even found a blog post that we'll include in the show notes, the top 25 iTunes University courses for elementary education. So they point to specific things offered by different areas, best practice writing lessons for elementary schools, how children think about math, and on and on. Courses for teachers as well, teacher development, teacher success things. So if you want to check out some of those recommendations for iTunes University courses, looks like some good stuff.
Yeah, and then some of the major players in content like CNN and those kinds of things are always putting out content that are useful, I think, for classrooms. So there's, a whole CNN student news section. And one of the neat things about, those kind of providers is they're constantly updating it with current events. They're categorizing it so that you can search by tag or that you can just search in general, which is going to become really important as we get more and more and more videos online. It's going to be harder and harder to find things, just like it is hard to find things with Google at this point. So these search engines are going to play an important role, and the ability to search through this good content is one of the things that some of these sites do really well, especially like CNN.
Right. They have quizzes that go along with each of their day's news. They have transcripts available, so very robust content available with CNN student news.
And probably something you'd want to throw, I hesitate to say it, in your RSS reader so that you can kind of keep up
throw it in your Feedly, right?
Yeah, don't put it in Google Reader, but put it in your favorite RSS reader, whatever that is now, so you can kind of keep up to date. And if you see something that piques your interest, as you're checking your feeds in the morning, then you know where to get it, and you can kind of aggregate all these sources. So. And you can I think you can set up RSS with almost all of these sites to see what new is coming in.
Mm-hmm. One last category of videos that are available for the classroom are being produced by textbook creators. Imagine that. The people with the hard copy books are getting into video. I know from a math perspective, Pearson has video lessons available to go along with their book series. So you can go in and watch four different lessons related to the topics in a particular video, and they even have them available in Spanish as well. Another Pearson offering is this Envision Math. Jason, you brought this one up.
Yeah, this is the curriculum that our district uses, and it's fantastic. There's so many neat things going on in here, and you know they've got videos and interactive activities and things you can download them. You get internet access to your textbook, so you don't have to carry that home. It's got testing and just amazing things that are available through this website that just kind of, you know, you could kind of extend your math a little bit further if you wanted to.
So is this based on a printed textbook, or this is all digital?
Yes, there's a printed textbook, and there are electronic resources.
It's a companion. It's enhanced material. It's not something to teach from.
It can be. Okay. If you're in a one-to-one situation, then you can just purchase the digital textbook and not have the physical textbook if you wanted to. There's no cost difference. So you get the paper, or you get the physical textbook, and you get the electronic textbook, and it's the same price as if you just got the electronic textbook.
So an online subscription or a DVD, or how does that work?
The way that we have it is it's a subscription. I think you can purchase it outright, but it's a lot more expensive to do it that way.
If you subscribe to it, basically the students have a login?
Correct. Yep. Okay. Yeah, you have an account manager. So like I manage all of the accounts for our district. So in August or whatever, I go in and create 2,400 accounts or whatever it is. Okay. And then at the end of the year, I delete them all and start all over again the next year.
So this could be pulled up on an iPad or a Chromebook or something like that?
It works. It's all Flash, so it'll work it'll work on a Chromebook. Mm-hmm. It won't work on an iPad. Okay. They do have apps for iPad, but I don't like them. So, okay.
Little gap.
But yeah.
Okay. Room to grow, huh?
Yep. Room to grow. That's exactly it.
And also keeping along with the theme of textbooks, there are open source textbooks available through CK through 12. And they're developing
CK12.org, yeah.
Quite a repository of videos to go along with the open source textbooks that they have available. So if you go into a particular topic, you can grab video resources to go along with the topic. So say you're interested in linear equations and algebra, then it comes up with, I think, four or five different videos that you can watch on that particular topic, as well as online interactive quizzing and testing and things like that. So quite a robust library that they're building on the CK12.org website.
Okay. Sally, we should probably move along and talk a little bit about using video in the classroom. Now, in a flip such situation, you're kind of dependent on what the students might have at home, you know, through their web browser on their computer. But in the classroom, there are considerations if you want to use video on any regular basis, and all the way from, you know, what kind of projector you have. Obviously, you want one that has some decent horsepower to it, with lumens and such. And sound is a critical issue, you know, when you're doing video. So don't count on your little computer speakers to be able to carry the day when you're trying to get sound out to a class of 25 kids and some of the din that they might make, you know, over the course of the video. So you got to pay attention to that kind of stuff. Any advice there, Jason? What do you guys do?
Well, in our district, we have amplified speakers in each of the classrooms. So, the projectors are mounted to the ceiling, and then there's the post that kind of comes down, and then there's speakers on the post. So that's how we do it here. The way that I always did it when I was in the classroom was I actually had, I just had a little boombox that had,
line in
it had the line in, and then I had a cable that went from the the RCA to the headphone jack, and I just plugged that into the headphone jack, and that worked beautifully. So, you know, that was
be enough for most of our size classrooms.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And, you know, if you I've even been having some conversations with other people on this, and there have been a couple of districts in my area anyways that just they put a little bit more into the projector itself and got something with 20 watt speakers. And that they said is adequate. So there. they just use the projector speakers.
That is if you're carrying sound into the projector through HDMI.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So that's been working out well for some people. Good. So, you know, just kind of keep that in mind when you're purchasing your projector. Look at the specs for it, and you know, I wouldn't go. You know, if 15-20 watts would be the absolute minimum for mm-hmm. a speaker. If it's got a 5 watt speaker, then I wouldn't worry about it. But, right.
Okay.
So that's kind of how we look at it.
Yep. And obviously the other concern is if you're streaming video, you need to have decent bandwidth. And I think that's certainly one of the primary considerations when you're thinking about bringing video into the classroom, especially if you're going to do this streaming, real time. So make sure that you've got, enough bandwidth there to do that. And that's fairly easy to test as well. But keep in mind that if you have, one-to-one initiative, you have a number of different devices on that wireless router. So make sure that you've got capacity covered and you've put some thinking and strategy behind your wireless infrastructure. Just going down to Best Buy and grabbing a local Linksys router is probably not going to do it for you.
Yeah, way to bring your classroom to a screeching halt. Tell all the kids to watch the same video at the same time.
And especially when you're doing one-to-one initiatives where they're all going to maybe say to Khan Academy site and pulling up different videos depending on where mm-hmm. they are in their course. Yeah, you can't do that without a good infrastructure.
Right. One thing to keep in mind is if it's available to you, you could download videos,
yep.
Potentially host those locally instead of relying on the internet connection to bring them down to you. There's a couple of video server solutions that we'll include in the show notes, including Media Goblin and Safari Montage that school districts may make use of to host their own video locally.
And if you have a Learn 360 subscription, you have the option of downloading those rather than streaming them, which is a nice feature.
Yeah.
Definitely. Or you could go the whole Apple TV route. I heard that the seminary is trying out Apple TVs.
Yeah, a few props up there are trying their iPads with Apple TV, and that with good success. And that's if you stay within the Apple realm, things work pretty well. So you use AirPlay, to stream a video from your iPad to the Apple TV, which is hooked up to a projector. One advantage to that, of course, is that you have some mobility there. And so you can walk around the classroom carrying your iPad and still stream content or use any of the other apps on your iPad. So you're not limited just to streaming video. You can do mirroring and do some demonstrations. If you're an art teacher, that's a cool application for that, those kinds of things.
Oh. Yeah, the other thing with those is you need to be that there again. Infrastructure is super important.
Yep.
You want to make sure that you're doing it right. And another thing that people need to consider is this is a consumer product, mm-hmm. and if you've got an enterprise class network, sometimes it doesn't work out so well if you've got a bunch of those devices on there. So kind of keep that in mind as you're planning for your infrastructure and stuff like that. Don't just buy a bunch of them and hope it works, because it won't.
Yeah, this is not something you do in August when school's starting in about 4 weeks. Early, do a lot of testing, and maybe start small. Don't try a campus-wide initiative. Do it in a classroom, see what's working well, and learn from that.
Definitely.
I think that is probably enough classroom video chat. And I think there's if you want to learn more, there's going to be a bunch of links, as Sally mentioned, in the show notes. So take a look at that. And I'm sure we haven't covered all the potential resources. So if you are listening and you say, well, they didn't talk about this, you can share that with us. Go to wellstech.wells.net and leave a comment, or wellstech@wells.net. Share a email, and we'll be sure to include that as we do our community feedback in next week's show. So please share with us, because I'm sure we haven't covered the the wealth that is online video these days. Let's move along to our picks of the week. And we always let our guests or semi-regular guests go first. So, Jason, what have you identified that's worth sharing today?
My pick of the week is a site called Popcorn Maker. You know, we're talking about classroom video and we're talking about how all of that stuff is going on. Popcorn Maker allows you to remix your videos. So you can add, take a YouTube video or something like that and add a little pop-up to it and make, you know, kind of like the VH1 kind of, you know, the pop-up videos that we used to watch. Well, at least that I used to watch sometimes.
I remember.
So, you know, you can add interesting little facts. You can search Wikipedia. You can have images and things like that pop up, text boxes. Super cool. And it's free. Plus, the other really neat thing about it is that they coded it in HTML5, so it should work on an iPad. I haven't tested it, but I know I've viewed videos, watched videos on an iPad, and it works perfectly. So super cool. Popcorn Maker, and that's a Mozilla project.
Cool.
So the web address is popcorn.webmaker.org. We'll
have
to try it out. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, and while you're there, they've got another tool on there, too. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a kind of a web programming kind of a tool. So that one's also worth checking out.
Hmm. Very good.
So you got two for one on me.
Awesome. Yeah. Symbol, maybe?
Mozilla stuff is awesome. So
yeah, they've got some good stuff going on.
Very good.
Sally?
My turn.
What's your pick? And I can't wait for this one.
This is for the ladies in the crowd, and we're going to talk about the Holy Hen House at holyhenhouse.com. It's a brand new blog that I came across that I think any of our female listeners for sure will definitely enjoy a read here. It is put together by a group of ladies, and they've chosen Titus 2:3-5 as their mission. And it says, likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. Then they can train the younger women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure, and to be busy at home, to be kind and to be subject to their husbands so that no one will malign the word of God. What an awesome mission that they've set out. They created the blog as encouragement for women and just kind of sharing their adventures and loving their families and thriving or not so thriving in the home. So they have a great backstory, a group of friends that have put this together. So definitely check it out. One blog post I read recently was called Mentor Monday. One of their series, a chat with a lady named Ellen, who has a lot to share about her Christian walk, her day-to-day life, and the ways that she balances home and a thriving business and lots of different interesting things here. So again, just worthy investment of your time with a group of Wells Christian ladies who are sharing their faith on the Hen House blog. So check it out.
Cool. Nicely designed too. It's very pleasing. And so throw that in your RSS reader as well.
Hey, speaking of RSS readers, I listened to my friends over at Lifehacker the other day. They have a video blog that I was listening to, and they said, don't abandon Google Reader yet. I know last week we were all down on the fact that Google Reader is going away. But they said, stick with it, because as the date gets closer, a lot of developers are going to give you a really easy and comparable way to exit out of it. So you have till July, and there's no reason to abandon ship yet. That was their advice.
Most of the readers that use it, like Feedly, allow you to add RSS feeds as well that I think would sync with it. So you're actually still using it until they decide to pull the plug from Reader and then or from Google Reader and build it themselves. So yeah, I think a lot of them are doing that at this point. So that's good. That's the good news side. All right, that leads me to my pick, which is along the same lines of what we've been talking about, and that's a video player. It's actually more than a video player. It's called Miro, M-I-R-O. It's been around for quite a while. This is Miro version 5. It's an open source project It's a music and video player that is cross-platform. You can get it in all kinds of different versions. So you can get it on Mac OS X. You can get it on Windows, Ubuntu, other Linux versions. So you've got a lot of choices there. So it's cross-platform. And a number of things I like about it. First of all, it allows you to catalog all your music and video in one place. So it'll search your hard drive and grab all that and allow you to categorize it and sort it and slice and dice it. One very cool thing is it allows you to convert it to different kinds of formats. So if you find a video or music file that you can't play, let's say on an iPad or Kindle or whatever, it will do the conversion for you. You can buy music through Amazon and Google Store and those kinds of things as well, but that's probably less useful. Another very cool feature of this is you can download and play almost any video. So even some of those things that don't let you download, it uses a technology similar to like KeepVid and will download it, and then you can convert it to whatever it is that you'd like. One last feature, which is really cool and probably useful for a lot of schools if they decide to use something like this, it can act as a media server. So you can install the client on a bunch of different machines, and maybe you install one on a server, and then you can share that media on your network. So as long as you're on the same network, you can see other Miro installations and then grab whatever media they have downloaded and bring it into your own Miro. So this works really well for classrooms that want to have the videos locally. So if the server has downloaded a bunch of stuff and created a playlist, let's say, for a particular topic, you can do that. So let me just quickly, those of you watching at home, I can share the what this actually looks like. This is the Mac version that I'm sharing at this point. So you've got basically a video interface, and you can see all of the videos that you've downloaded. One of the very cool things is you can search across different kinds of video sources, and they've indexed a lot, and I think they're adding more as they go along. So let's say you want to teach a lesson on participles. So if I just search on participles, it's going to search across all the categories that it can find and pull up things that things that match that. Maybe I spelled participles wrong. Yeah, maybe not. So I came across a lot more videos before. And what it allows
missing,
you to,
you're missing an I after the T.
Part, that's why. And apparently those videos did too. There we go. There we go. So now we've got a bunch of stuff on participles. So from YouTube, from all these other resources. And then what you've got here is a little download button, and you've got some other options here too. So you can download, you can copy the URL, you can go to the website itself. So once I download this, it takes just a minute to download, and you can kind of see in the left-hand column, it shows you what's downloading, and it does it very quickly. And if I go to my video section, I'll see all the videos that I've downloaded. But what you can do then is you can play it from right there, and you can see it's in an MP4 format. But I can convert it to all these different formats, mobile, MP4. I can pull out just the audio, those kinds of things. I can tell it what kind of media it is. Is it a movie, a show, a clip, a podcast? And I can, I can delete it here, of course, but I can always add it to a playlist. So if I want to put together a series of videos on a topic, I can create a new playlist. Let's say English participles, and what that'll do is allow me to add other videos to it. But if there are other people on the same network running Miro, they can come in and grab my playlist and pull in all the videos that I've collected from from these different sources and bring them to their local machine, and then they're ready to go for class. So
That's very, very cool
tool. And you can add different sources. Now, the sources aren't, all these sources that I've added aren't searchable, but they make it real easy to kind of jump from one to another. So I've got Vimeo added. I have a YouTube education added. If I wanted to, TED, I think it's ed.ted.com, right? I can add that as a source. and it'll pop up down here, and then I can go directly to that and do a search there. So I can quickly go through these things that they don't search and find those for myself as well. So Very just cool. Kind of your video hub for you know, all things. It does audio, but I think primarily for our purposes, video is cool. And then it downloads them to a local file structure, and then you can share them across your network. So all for free. It's open source, and a project that has, I think, spent a lot of time, got a lot of people contributing to it. So that's getmiro.com is the URL if you want to grab a copy and try it out for yourself. There's no cost to that. So
think I'll be grabbing a copy and trying it out. That's cool. Sounds cool. Yeah.
All right. Let me get off my screen sharing here. There we go. Let's move along to something that we want to begin to make people aware of that you may want to plan a trip to New Ulm for. What's that, Sally?
I'm very excited to announce that we are going to be hosting our first ever Wells Tech Camp coming up Saturday, September 14th at Martin Luther College. And you may remember that recently we interviewed Emily Dittmar. We talked a lot. I think it was actually 2 months ago, Jason, when you were on the show, about the concept of an ed camp. And ed camps are basically unconferences. You show up that day. People suggest topics they want to discuss. There's no sage on the stage leading the conversation. Everyone contributes, and you move room to room and participate in conversations around education topics. We're going to do a slightly different twist to it. We're calling it Wells Tech Camp because we want it to cover technology and ministry in both the church and school settings. So we're looking for discussion, suggestions, anything and everything related to topics we cover on the podcast, like social media for churches or one-to-one classroom computing or digital Bible study or whatever it may be. Come that day, suggest a topic. We'll have rooms set up. We'll have, I think, 4 session time slots. So we should be able to cover quite a few topics in that time period. Everything's planned to be free. We're going to have food available for those who participate. We're hoping for some giveaways at the end of the day. And again, there's no conference registration cost. All of that is going to be covered by sponsorships we plan to obtain. And if you come into town a little early, you can even meet up with a group of techies on Friday night. We're looking for a venue to host a meetup on Friday night as well. So looking forward to the first ever Wells Tech Camp, September 14th.
And how do they sign up?
Well, our wiki page is wellstechcamp.wikispaces.com. We'll have a link in the show notes, and there's links on that page to get registered.
Okay. Be there, be nowhere. That is the place to be on that weekend. I'm really looking forward to that.
So. The three of us are going to be there.
Yeah, you know what? So that's, you know, if nothing else, that's we can have
hopefully we can have
a camp with the three of us at least.
There you go.
We'll record it.
All right. Yeah, and we will stream these things too. That's what we're working on. So that'll be exciting too. So if you absolutely can't be there and want to tune into any of the conversation, you'll be able to do that. Let's move on to community feedback, Sally.
And at the top of the list is my friend Jason Schmidt, who shared a link via Digo to EdCanvas. Jason, I'll share my screen if you want to explain a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So EdCanvas is, I just found out about this. Actually, I'm fresh off of my own EdCamp. EdCamp Omaha was this last weekend. So I found out about this at that. And what this basically is a... It's kind of a way to organize web resources. So if you have a video that you want to show, and then maybe you have some text that you want to add to kind of explain what it was that they were doing, it's a really neat kind of, almost kind of like a Pinterest feel to it, but very very customizable. So you get these tiles, like what Sally's showing here, and there can be videos, there can be documents. You can link it to your Google Drive. You can link it to... Digo, they've got a little bookmarklet that you can put in and bookmark web pages to it. So lots of really cool ways that this can be used. And then, you know, just like you see here, it's just a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, just a progression from one thing to the next. And yeah, it's really, really slick. So and they just saw that they They've added the capability to kind of hook into Edmodo. So if you're an Edmodo user, you can hook this into that. And the other really cool thing is that there's absolutely no cost to it. It's our favorite price tag. And I'm just kind of starting to get into it a little bit, but super cool, very useful, very intuitive, really easy to use this kind of as a way to have your teachers can create content and share it with students. And then you can also, it's really easy to set up a class when you create an account, and your students can sign up for accounts and they don't need email addresses. They just use your PIN. So, you know, a whole bunch of really neat applications I could see for something like this in the classroom.
Yeah, or flip classrooms, that's probably a great
Or if you're doing a flip classroom, this would be another way to do that too. Yep.
Just go there and go step by step through the lesson, play the video, read the content, look at the images. Very cool.
Thanks for sharing.
Edcanvas.com.
Also via Digo, we heard from Mike Marquardt, who shared a link to Quaver's Marvelous World of Music. So he said it's a mostly web-based music curriculum that teachers in Kettle Moraine Federation took a look at a couple of months ago. You get a bunch of schools together to look at it, and they just might bring food. They had Panera cater a meal for us during the presentation. So if you're interested at all in an online music curriculum, maybe you want to talk to Quaver's Marvelous World of Music.
Yep. So. Wonderful. I haven't looked at this. It does look like there's a fee, however, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a pricing model there. So cool.
All right. Martin, you probably were the one of us who participated in the first ever Wells Ed tweet chat. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that experience.
Very cool. There were probably a dozen of us online last Thursday night just using Twitter to have a dialogue about education. And we talked about different things like social media and, good resources that you can find online and kind of the state of education and just all kinds of cool things, you know, curriculum, what kind of curriculums are digital curriculums are available and textbooks and those kinds of things. And I was kind of an outsider because I'm not in the classroom. I think everybody else on that was an educator and spending serious time in the classroom. So it was a learning experience for me. And Rachel Pearson had, I think, set it up, and they're going to try and do this every month now. So if you want to get on board with this, follow Rachel, which I forget what her Twitter handle is.
It's A-L-E-I-X-A, Alexia.
Alexia, so, right.
And so just follow she does her. Have the date. It's April 4th at 8 o'clock Central is the next one. So.
Yep, and it's very easy to do. There's some tools that make it easy to follow that hashtag, and it's basically just 140 character bursts of thought and response, and we did it for an hour, and it flew by, so it was very cool.
Awesome. All right. Next up, we want to mention that Pastor Mark Parsons shared a link with us to Paramentics, Liturgical Art for Christian Worship. And his comment was, pastors and administrative assistants, check out the great liturgical artwork by designer Ian Welch at this website. So I haven't dug far enough to know.
Looks cool.
But yeah. They follow the 3-year series of readings used in Christian worship. So looks like an excellent resource.
Art symbols, yep. Templates.
And a comment from Caleb Bassett. I'm guessing this is a Wells artist.
I was going to say, I think Ian Welch went to MLC at the same time I was there. So
okay.
I think awesome. I know who he is.
Awesome.
And Caleb Bassett, I know him.
Yep. Yeah. So here's an example of some of the artwork, and I guess you can buy it for $2 a piece. Mm-hmm. So
it's a bargain.
Very good.
Yeah, nice. Then it's yours to use year over year. So.
Right. We do our own bulletin covers using similar kind of artwork. So I'm sure we would appreciate having this resource at our available resources.
Definitely a kind of style, which could be good if you're using it in a series or through the pericope. So I like it.
Yeah.
All right. And then lastly, I want to make mention of an email I received from Cindy Krueger. Cindy is over in Michigan, and she knows my love of the Raspberry Pi. She thought I'd want to know about cotton candy as well. Why is it they name everything after really delicious food?
Google's,
I don't know.
That's Google's way. Yeah.
Really, so, really delicious or really disgusting.
There you go. Really sweet. How about that? Cotton candy is actually something developed by a Norwegian developer. It's a USB drive. That basically has the Android operating system on it. So you can plug it into a Mac or PC and bring up a separate pop-up of Gingerbread, the operating system for Android 2.3, and have basically all the Android apps and games on any computer. Or you can put it on a HDMI, HDTV HDMI port and turn it into a small internet connected monitor.
So it's got two jacks on it. One is HDMI and one is USB. So it's kind of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of concept. So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. Quite the mashup there. So thanks for sharing, Cindy. You know, I didn't find an exact price or where you could buy it, so I need to do a little more digging. I just found articles about its existence, but I'll do some more digging. Hopefully have a note.
At the bottom of that article, I think it says there's what the cost is.
It says it produces the device will cost well under $200.
Yeah.
So we'll see if it's even available for sale yet. I just took a quick look. So try to have some more links in the show notes.
Okay. And that's going to do it for community feedback, right, Sally?
That's correct.
All right. If you want to contribute, we already mentioned the website, wellstech.wells.net, wellstech@wells.net's email. If you go to the website, you can now leave a voicemail right from your computer. So please do that. And, of course, we're on Pinterest, Facebook, Twitter, Digo. We love our Digo links. You know, we're all over the place. So no excuses for not to contribute to the show, and that's really what we hope that you would do. So please take care of those comments in that way. Next week, we are going to be talking to an architect slash designer slash just all around nice person, Carissa Nelson. And we're going to be talking about mobile photography. That's an important aspect to any website or any materials that you might produce. So the fact that you can do this in a with a smart device is something that you couldn't do probably 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, they say the best camera, the best camera is the one you have with you. So
that's exactly right.
You can capture some of those church and school events using that mobile camera.
Absolutely. All right. Jason, thanks for joining us once again. We always value your contributions, and we look forward to working with you more on Wells Tech Camp.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm excited to be a part of it.
And Sally is always nice job. Thank you. Let's close the show with the music of Corbin Creek, their song Empty Grave. Blessings on your holy week, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. Tokyo.